back to the grassroots thing in Madison, but you want to come up and visit sometime.
Where are you from?
I'm from Madison, Wisconsin, WORT Radio.
Mary Eigner, KZYX, Philo, California, proud Pacifica affiliate for over 15 years. I can't imagine what our audience would do without our their daily fix of Pacifica Radio.
My name is Janice Lane Ewart. I'm the executive director of KFAI, Fresh Air Radio, a Pacifica affiliate. It's important for the board of directors to understand that there's representation of the viewpoints of Pacifica throughout the country. There are ways in which affiliate stations can move forward agenda items and policies for Pacifica in the communities in which they live. In the Twin Cities, there's a very progressive agenda towards democracy and social change to the extent that we as affiliates can help larger body Pacifica move that agenda.
Hi, I'm Paul from
started. We will have public comment at the time allotted on the agenda. Come heck or high water, if I can say heck on the air. board member because it'll be distracting. Otis can do it. Do you have a pen? Be timekeeper. Well, they weren't. The problem was they weren't told until the last minute, and couldn't be here because he had some medical issues. Okay, I believe we have quorum. So, if all the board members in the room could take their seats, we'll start the meeting.
Sorry, Rob, I saw you there waiting to move over.
You know Ms. Higgs? Okay, Teresa Allen, are you here?
Yes, I am.
Are you prepared to call the roll?
Yes.
Great, thank you. Okay, at the corner of the table there is a sign-up sheet for public comment, which will be starting at 8 o'clock. And so, if you'd like to speak during public comment, please sign up on that sheet. Okay, I'm going to call the meeting to order. We're now beginning the Pacifica National Board meeting. My name is Dave Adelson. I'm the chair. Before Teresa Allen, who's the secretary, calls the roll, I'd just like to extend a welcome on behalf of the whole National Board to Dr. Evelyn Bethune, our newest member, listener-sponsored representative from Houston. Welcome, Dr. Bethune.
Yes, welcome.
Teresa, can you call the roll, please?
Right. 7:10 p.m. David Adelson?
Here.
Teresa Allen is here. Mary Burke?
Here.
Evelyn Bethune? Eddie Brazon? A.C. Bird? Lisa Davis?
Present.
Yvonne Dooley? Patty Heckley? Ray LaForest? Ambrose Lane?
Here.
Hello.
Bob Lepper?
Here.
Alan Minsky?
Oh.
Rosalinda Montes-Palacios? Sarbrin Dawa?
Yes.
Rick Robbins? Rob Robinson?
Present.
Deb Shapto.
Here.
Serena Shakir.
Here.
Sandy Weinman.
Here.
John White.
Here.
LaVarne Williams.
Present.
Executive Director Greg Guma.
He just stepped out.
Okay. And Lonnie Hicks, CFO.
Donna Gates, could you let Ursula know that we'll be starting her presentation very shortly? Given the schedule, we're behind. I wanted to make a couple of suggestions to keep us on schedule for tonight. The first section, which was slated originally to take 45 minutes, was the welcome, the roll call, the agenda review, the approval of minutes, and special rules of order. I'd like to suggest, given that the minutes that have just been distributed recently, that we move that to the first item of unfinished business on Sunday morning. Is there any objection to doing that so that people have the opportunity to read the minutes?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I actually think because these minutes are so lengthy that, and we just got them, that we should postpone it to our next teleconference.
Can we take up that question as the first item of Sunday morning unfinished business and not debate that now? People can take the time to look at them and decide between now and then whether we ought to postpone or not. The next item is I wanted to ask for the consent of the board for a couple of procedural agreements during the course of this meeting. The first is to follow our policy that we've had in recent meetings of allowing the chair to recognize time allowing debate from the public, comments from the public during debate if there is an issue that is particularly amenable to input from one or more members of the audience. And that time would be taken off the end of the allotted public periods for public comment. So we would still have the same total amount of public comment time, but we'd provide, if there was time permitting, members of the audience to comment on issues immediately before us in debate. Is that acceptable to the board? There's no objection, then I'll proceed in that way. The next thing is I've proposed in prior meetings that we agree that for motions to refer an item, to postpone an item, or to divide a question, that the board allow me prerogative to recognize two speakers in favor of the motion and two opposed, and then call the vote on referral, postponement, or division, so that we don't spend over much time on those procedural motions and can keep ourselves on substantive motion. Is there any objection to allowing me, after hearing two pro and two con, to call a vote?
Dave?
Yes.
Could we try at first? I mean, the problem I have with this, obviously, is that if neither position would present, let's say, my own, then I would be left out of the debate. So.
Well, the purpose of the motion is to actually allow the chair the prerogative of calling a vote, and so I would exercise discretion if I felt that if somebody said, I have a position that's quite distinct from what's been offered as yet, I could recognize it. I wouldn't want to do that too much, and at times I would call it because in the interest of time. But if that would be acceptable to allow the chair the prerogative to do that, then I think it could speed the work of the board. Is there any objection to allowing that? Yes, Rosalinda. Okay. In that case, may we have, shall we have a short debate on that and then we can hold the vote?
If it were, Mr. Chair?
Go ahead.
Can we just call the question and get it over with?
Well, I think Rosalinda's objecting for a reason, and I think we should hear her reason before deciding.
Well, I think it should be based on the situation, and I don't think it should be all the time because, you know, all the motions aren't going to be the same. So I think we shouldn't limit participation.
Okay. This, again, is just on motions to refer, to postpone, or to divide a question, not other motions. Would you find it more acceptable if we said three pro and three con?
Why don't we just vote?
Lydia?
I object as well, but for a different reason, and I think that the board might be inclined to just have, you know, one pro, one con. I mean, that's why I just object in general, because I think two and two might be too much. It might be too much.
That's right. Well, too many.
Of course, if members decide not to comment, of course, we'll get there more quickly. But
I know. But I would just, yes, but that encourages, I have found in other settings, not Pacifica settings, that sometimes setting a two and two, that people tend to repeat the same thing and they just feel obligated that, oh, well, if you have one pro, then I must have something to say on the other, you know, on the other side. And so I would vote against it for that reason rather than for more comment.
Teresa?
I would vote for it because I find it productive.
There's no further debate on it, then perhaps we should call the question. So all those in favor of allowing the chair the discretion of calling a vote after hearing two in favor and two opposed to motions to refer to committee, to postpone to a definite time, or to divide a question, please raise your hand.
So on procedural matters only.
The motion to refer an item to a committee, the motion to postpone an item to a definite time, or to divide a question. Okay? Do you have that, Teresa? Okay. Now, as to... Oh, all those opposed? Okay. Now, you have before you a proposed agenda. Is there a motion to accept the proposed agenda? Yes, Mary?
Mr. Chair, I move that we approve the agenda as amended with the amendation was the minutes to be postponed until Sunday.
Okay, and Deb Shaft to second it. Is there discussion on the agenda? Hearing none, may we...
Excuse me.
Yes.
Maybe I'm just confused. 45 minutes, just the rationale for 45 minutes for special rules of order.
We have none. We just took care of all that.
Yeah.
So there's nothing else.
But it was originally given 45 minutes?
Yeah. Our experience at prior meetings had been discussions of the sort we just had, and the agenda approval took a great deal of time.
Okay. Good.
Yes, Andy.
I'd like to move to shorten the time dedicated to KPFT from 4:20 to 5 o'clock to by 10 minutes, 4:30 or 4:20 to 4:50, and add 10 minutes to the other three stations.
Okay, so there's a motion to reduce the KPFT report with Dwayne Bradley from 40 minutes to 30 minutes, and to give that 10 minutes to make 50 minutes for station Q&A with the managers from the other three stations. Is there a second to that amendment?
Second.
Okay, is there debate on it?
I just have a question. What's the rationale for that?
Rationale simply is we just came through a fund drive, and although we were a little bit short, it wasn't anything earth-shaking. And being closely involved with KPFT and the LSB and the finances, et cetera, I don't believe that there's anything earth-shaking there that would require that amount of time, and we've dedicated very, very little time to the other three stations. So this would open up just maybe for a couple extra questions there.
We've heard a statement in favor. Is there a statement in opposition to the motion? Teresa Allen?
Well, not only do I think that KPFT GM probably has a presentation prepared, but is also prepared for questions, Q&A, and we did decide at our last meeting that we would give special attention to two stations, and it was decided that KPFT was going to be one of them. So I'm looking forward to people hearing what we have available at KPFT.
Is there anybody else who would like to speak in favor of the motion to reduce the time for KPFT? Is there anybody who would like to speak in opposition?
Is it to reduce the time or to expand the time?
It's to reduce
the time for the report and expand it.
It's to reduce the time for KPFT and expand the time for the other three stations.
So you were going from 40 to 50 minutes?
You're correct.
Well, I offer a substitute motion that we allow KPFT for 50 minutes, and they'll manage the time themselves.
Oh, it's I'm not clear. When you say 50 minutes, we only have 40 minutes there. The proposal was to go down to 30 and the other up to 50. I don't understand.
The total of how many minutes?
80 minutes for the two items from
My God. 80 minutes.
Right, 40 for KPFT and 40 in total for the other three stations that are not our focus stations at this meeting.
I'm just dealing with KPFT. How many minutes were they asking?
They were 40. Allotted 40 on the proposed agenda, and a motion's been made to reduce that by 10 minutes.
Period.
Period. Well, and that 10 minutes would be added to the next agenda item.
So they're asking for 50 minutes.
For the next agenda item, for the three-station report.
It would be reduced to 30.
I think I sense a withdrawal.
30 and Q&A, right, for 10.
Right. Mary?
I had a point of information. I answered my own question. Sorry for the... I was wondering where BAI was, and I saw where it was, so...
Arif?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I want to speak against that. I think we decided a long time ago that there will be a couple of focus stations, and KPFT is one of it. So I think that we should not reduce 10 minutes, and I think we should stick to 40 minutes. And if we don't have any questions, naturally we'll move on to the next item. So I'll oppose it.
Okay. So all those in favor of the motion to reduce by 10 minutes the time for KPFT and to expand by 10 the time for the other three stations, all those in favor of that motion, please raise your hand.
Five.
All those opposed, please raise your hand. And while I'm thinking of it, I neglected...
Point of information, how many? Please, could you say in the mic, into the mic?
Nine opposed. I neglected one point on those process motions. There's one other motion about the 2-4 and 2-against that I'd like permission on, and that is motions to extend time. Is that acceptable as well?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you very much. All right. I don't believe we have any. If there are no further amendments to the agenda, well, actually, there was one point about the programming committee. Is that what you were going to raise? It's our understanding that the programming committee did not actually complete a report for this meeting. So one of the things that was. Is that true?
No, I submitted a report.
Okay. We thought that there were motions. My understanding was that at the last programming committee meeting,
yes.
The programming committee did not decide to forward certain motions that...
We haven't finished the policy, that's correct.
So one of the questions that came up in discussion, and this was something Bob raised, was whether that time could be used to discuss national programming policy, the implementation of national programming as it's presently contemplated or being discussed amongst the operations group. And so the question to the board, well, maybe you want to...
Well, yeah. Our executive director has announced the launch of a new program in the fall on the congressional elections and so forth. And there's other initiatives being talked about for national programs. And I think it raises a lot of policy issues that the board should explore. And we have this time period that had been planned for the permanent national policy that now is not available, and I think we should use that to good advantage to really engage in a dialogue here on the board about how we want to approach the question of new national programs.
Greg,
I have no comment on the substantive issue of the programming committee, but I do have a clarification on that point. I haven't announced anything at this point. I've simply held a brainstorming session to discuss a few ideas with people. So in terms of any formal announcement, that's not accurate.
Move the agenda, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. The question, I believe, is whether... Well, I guess we can decide that during the hour allotted to the program committee, so there's been a request to move the agenda. All those in favor of adopting the agenda as not amended, please raise your hand. Okay. And those opposed? None opposed. With that, our opening presentation and discussion is on the affiliates program from Ursula Rudenberg. It's scheduled for 45 minutes. I said when I sat down that we would start public comment edits allotted time of 8 o'clock, but to allow 45 minutes for Ursula, we'll move that to 8:10. So we will have public comment beginning at 8:10. Ursula, it's your show for the next 45 minutes. And for those that don't know, Ursula Rudenberg is our affiliates program coordinator. Would you like? We should move out of the way.
Should I be over here?
I think you can be where Pete is. There's a mic there, and we'll move out of the way.
Not coming back from a standby.
Yeah. Do you know melancholy, baby?
Okay, we're going to start and hope the technical part catches up here. Okay. Okay, I'm going to face this way, I guess. I apologize to the people behind me. I'm trying to figure out the correct place to stand. My name's Ursula Rudenberg, and I'm very pleased to be able to have some time to describe the affiliates program to you. Before I start, I would just like to express what a tremendous pleasure it is for me and honor not only to work for the Pacifica Foundation, but to have worked now for several years with community radio stations across the country. I'm one of the luckiest people, I think, in the foundation because I work all day with station managers. And the station managers are generally extremely independent and intelligent and people with tremendous leadership quality. And I know there's several in the room, and I feel that way about them as well. And it's just been a real pleasure working with community radio across the country. What I would like to do tonight at the beginning of this presentation is to give you all a brief history of where the affiliates program came from. It's a story about the history of Pacifica, and I would like to relay it to you so that you you know what this program is. The story starts back in the late 1940s when Pacifica was started, after the model for community radio was developed by KPFA in Berkeley. There were many community radio stations began to spring up around the country using the model of KPFA. And many of you might know the names of Lorenzo Milam and Jeremy Landsman, who were two pioneers who kind of went around the country and started building community radios using the community radio model. And we're actually fortunate today to have Jeremy Landsman has returned and is part of our affiliates network now. He has a radio station up in Alaska and is with us today. In the 1970s and the 1980s, we began to see the beginning of what was a distribution system for Pacifica. We had reporters throughout the network and also some stringers in Europe, and a group of reporters from KPFA who went to Washington, D.C. to report on what was happening in D.C. And they were what was first called the Washington Bureau. And they began to create a news feed which was patched together by telephone.
and distributed to Pacifica stations across the country. And then we also had some other community radio stations like KUNM in Albuquerque and KGNU, where Marty Derlin comes from, who also took this news feed. And this was shared by telephone. In 1975, the National Confederation of Community Broadcasters was created. And as part of this project, there was something called the Program Exchange, because community radio stations around the country began to feel that they wanted to exchange programming with each other. And this was literally an exchange of tapes that was sent around. The man in charge of it was a man named Bill Thomas, who's up in North Dakota now with public radio. Bill Thomas came to work at Pacifica, and he was actually a director of the Pacifica Radio Archives originally. And so when he came, he brought the tape exchange with him. And so Pacifica inherited this tape exchange program, which kind of came to fruition later on when in 1980, public radio got a satellite, and Pacifica rented space on it. And then Bill Thomas was finally able to really distribute programs around the country effectively. The mail didn't work that well. And so Pacifica stations and also community radio stations outside of Pacifica would bring their programs to, or producers from these stations would bring their programs to Bill Thomas, and he would put them on the satellite. And so then another piece of what developed the affiliates program was that in 1972, Larry Bensky attributes to the first live coverage of national conventions. They covered the Republican and Democratic National Convention with the help of some other kind of radio geeks around the country. I think Jeremy Landsman was involved. And this was really the beginning of the idea of live coverage, which later developed more fully with the Iran-Contra hearings with Larry Bensky. So what you have here is a bunch of people that want to exchange news, they want to exchange programs with each other, they want some high-end production of live coverage, and there's people in community radio stations all around the country who wanted to do this together. And so what you had was really the beginning of a national network. And the affiliates were always part of that activity. And I want to point this out to you because to help you understand that what the affiliates are probably the most desirable kind of client base that any business could want. You have a group of people who have a shared history with us, shared principles, and tremendous loyalty, and have really been part of a natural maturing process with us. And so today we have this tremendous asset of this body of community radio stations who share our mission and want to continue working with us. I'm gonna jump ahead to recent history. In 1990s, formal relations began with affiliates. The Pacifica started a national program service, which was headed by Gail Christian in Los Angeles. And the affiliates program was developed in a very focused and rapid way. Free satellite dishes and satellite receiving equipment was given out to many radio stations across the country. And in our files, we have records of 79 affiliates at that time, seemed to be the peak number. At that time, also Democracy Now! Was started and Pacifica National News. So you really had the beginning of a substantial affiliates program with kind of a real process of contracts. And then we enter into the period that we all know as the Pacifica crisis. Between 1999 and 2000, the National Program Service was terminated, and the affiliate program dropped from 79 stations to 13. And the reasons most commonly cited in our records that people did write in to Pacifica and tell them why they didn't like us anymore. And they complained of lack of services, lack of communication, unfair prices, and erratic programming. And most of all, probably violation of the mission. And so the affiliates participated in protesting during the Pacifica struggle, and they participated mostly through writing manifestos and boycotting. And Rip Robbins can tell you about that period. He was very much part of that period. And if you're interested in hearing what happened. He has some good stories to tell. I think KSVR boycotted, right? Yeah, yeah. Okay, so after the settlement in 2002, during the struggle, Dina Colbert, who is sitting right here, actually began to make inroads through the Pacifica campaign to begin communicating with all the affiliates that had left on political principle, and began to make connections with them. And after the settlement, there was a committee formed of the Interim Pacifica National Board. Teresa Allen headed it up. And I was hired to conduct a survey to figure out who had been an affiliate and what had happened. Out of that survey really was formed a committee that began to work together with some IPMB members and also some of the members of the affiliates who had been most actively involved during the struggle. And really a program was hammered out that was extremely responsive and focused on customer service and a sense of partnership. And since then, the affiliate program has grown quite rapidly. I was hired as an affiliates coordinator in 2003. And I'm going to give you some handouts showing you some of the statistics on the growth. And if you would ask me why the program has grown so rapidly, I would say probably the reason is because this program was really designed according to the requests that were given to us from the affiliates and was really based on the principle of partnership in community radio. So it works? Okay, good. So I'm going to jump real fast here because we have limited time. What? Okay. So I'm going to let some of the affiliates tell you themselves why they affiliate with us. We were recently at the National Federation of Community Broadcasters, and we took this little home movie to bring back to you for this board meeting. This meeting was in Portland, Oregon.
To get out the word about issues and keep dialogue going. And we hope you have a great board meeting and keep doing the great work that you do.
Get out to the grassroots thing in Madison, but you want to come up and visit sometime.
Where are you from?
I'm from Madison, Wisconsin, WORQ Radio.
Mary Eigner, KZYX, Philo, California, proud Pacifica affiliate for over 15 years. I can't imagine what our audience would do without our their daily fix of Pacifica Radio.
My name is Janice Lane Ewart. I'm the executive director of KFAI Fresh Air Radio in Minneapolis and St. Paul. I am a Pacifica affiliate. I think it's important for the board of directors to understand that there's representation of the viewpoints of Pacifica throughout the country. There are ways in which affiliate stations can move forward agenda items and policies for Pacifica and the communities in which they live. In the Twin Cities, there's a very progressive agenda towards democracy and social change. To the extent that we as affiliates can help the larger body of Pacifica move that agenda forward, we are available and willing to do so.
Hi, I'm Paul from Syracuse Community Radio, and we're an affiliate, and I am excited about community radio. It's fun to be at the conference again.
And so my name is Gavin Dahl. I'm a co-music director at Chaos Radio in Olympia, Evergreen State College, 89.3 FM, and it's my first ever time at NFCB. It's really awesome meeting a lot of other Pacifica affiliates. Getting to see the speech from Gregory today was just like so powerful. I was really like pleased to hear that he's like taking this kind of leadership role. And
I wish you all very well in your efforts, and I wish Greg the very best of luck with his efforts to unify the Pacifica family and move us all collectively ahead to do a better job in the future, because America needs Pacifica very badly.
Yeah. Hi, my name is Jamie Hoover. I'm the general manager at KUGS FM Bellingham, Washington, and we're a Pacifica affiliate.
And I'd like to say that I appreciate all the work that Pacifica and the Archives does as a teaching tool for students who come into the radio station to learn what public affairs programming is, to listen to models, and also to have a historical perspective of Pacifica and what they've been doing over the last 55 years.
Hi, this is Donna DiBianco from KAOS in Olympia, Washington, out at the NFCB conference here in Portland, Oregon. It's been a beautiful day. It's really nice to be around the Pacifica and you're going to edit, right? It's great to be around the Pacifica Network as well as the affiliates. We get a chance to gather, share ideas, share information, and make a more solid foundation. Thanks for having us.
Hey, I'm Donna Lynn Maldonado. I'm the general manager of KRCO in Salt Lake City, Utah. And we have been a Pacifica affiliate for, oh my God, probably since we went on the air. We've been on the air for 26 years. And we started running Democracy Now! When it first came out, and we're still running it, and we carry other Pacifica programs.
Hi, I'm Matt Murphy. I'm the general manager of Community Radio, WERU-FM, in East Orland, Maine. We've been Pacifica affiliates for a number of years, and I'd say right now we're happiest to be a Pacifica affiliate than we've ever been. The work that Ursula and Dina and others have done to get the affiliates program to be something more meaningful than just us buying programs from Pacifica distribution has meant a lot, and it's really important for us. We feel good about belonging to something bigger than our own station. Our own station is precious to us, but the notion that there's a network, a connection, a family of stations around the country working on the issues of making the world a more just and equitable place is really important to us.
Tunde Obaze, KNON, 89.3 FM, Dallas, Fort Worth. Peace.
Anything else about being an affiliate?
A new affiliate of Pacifica Radio from the Empowerment Radio Division.
Hi, I'm Lupito Flores. I'm the station manager at KYRS LP in Spokane, Washington, and I'm a proud affiliate. Pacifica is very different from what it was in 1991. When I first tried to apply for 89.7 in 1991, I went to NFCB, which back then was, well, y'all know, and no help. And I went to NPR, no help. And I went to Pacifica, and no help, unfortunately. But I'm so glad to say Pacifica is not like that anymore. Pacifica now is very aggressively getting out there. Amy Goodman's on hundreds of outlets, unlike back then. There's very aggressive efforts, like the mapping of possible high full-powered radio stations. It's so exciting to be part of history where, you know, I've been there for when it wasn't so good, and now where it's exciting and happening, and now I have skills to share with people and stories. And I'm just really thrilled to be able to be alive at this point in history.
Because we are connected to the world through our affiliation with Pacifica, we have a certain amount of gravity. We're taken more seriously as a source of important global information. And it's very enriching. It keeps us in contact with one another. It helps us do better community service and fulfill our mission statement to be affiliates. And so we value it very highly.
Okay.
Hi, I'm Marcos Martinez. I'm the program director at KUNM Radio in Albuquerque. And we're so appreciative to Pacifica for the wonderful work that you do in creating grassroots public journalism and other kinds of grassroots programming and making that available to our station and to all the community and public radio stations across the United States. People in our listening area in northern and central New Mexico so appreciate the work that you do at Pacifica. They so depend on it to be informed and to have an alternative perspective available to them. And they're so grateful and happy, and they really support our station because of the programming that you provide. And so I just want to say thanks and keep up the work. And please let us know what we can do to support your work and to help you to continue with your projects. Thanks.
Hello? Okay. I love bringing these little home movies to presentations to the board because I just really want you to keep seeing these people and who they are and how much they really care about being part of this network. I'm going to let a few other people speak because a lot of other people are involved with working with the affiliates. But before I do that, just to give you some basic information, today the way we distribute programming, for those of you who are not up on this, we have several methods. We have a satellite called the KU satellite, which is uplinked through KPFA in Berkeley. Other stations download programming, primarily these would be the stations that take Free Speech Radio News or Democracy Now. They actually, many of them download from their websites, from these shows' websites. we also rent space on the public radio satellite, PRSS satellite, to air Democracy Now, and some of the public radio stations that are affiliates use that satellite. AudioPort was created about 2 years ago. It's our internet website for distributing sound files over the web, and also at AudioPort we can stream the satellite, and so the satellite is being streamed online on a constant basis, so stations that don't have satellites can also access the satellite through the internet. There are some other ways that people get our programming. They're kind of amazing. I know of one woman who actually records Democracy Now! On our VCR and then drives 15 miles every day and puts the VCR on the air. And so you have situations like that, too. Okay, I would like to introduce Diane Reinhart. Diane is a volunteer for the Affiliates Program and has done a lot of work. And Diane, why don't you describe what you've been doing?
Over the past 2 years, I've worked with Ursula and Pete to develop two projects, one to build a website for the affiliates and one to create a newsletter for the affiliates. Both of these, obviously, tools that we hope will enhance communication among the affiliates and will also allow better communication between Pacifica and the affiliate networks. And both of them that use the greater resources and centrality of Pacifica to support the grassroots media, to give some sort of a central way for those scattered stations to share ideas and exchange ideas and to be in touch with each other. The first project that I worked on was the website, and working from Pete's design, I worked with Ursula to create content for the website, and my section was primarily the section that talked about why different stations should affiliate with Pacifica. In order to write those statements, what I needed to do first was contact various affiliate stations. So it allowed me to talk to people all across the country and from every kind of station, college stations, community stations, the public stations. Talking to those people was inspirational, primarily because it reminded me every time I spoke to and everyone I spoke to of how these are the people that are really on the front lines of living what the Pacifica mission is, that if you go to a fundamental belief of the idea that dialogue and information can really help save the world, they're out there in local communities organizing and starting it, and that really is the front line of any kind of peace movement, of any kind of social movement. So they were inspirational. They talked also so passionately, as you saw in the video, of what Pacifica means to them. So I talked to people like, to give you some examples, like Lupito Flores, who talked about how in his area in Washington, every other radio station is a member of a larger conglomerate station, so that his station is the only voice that brings things like Democracy Now! Or Free Speech Radio News. Talked to people like Ann Alquist in Minneapolis, who talked about how being part of Pacifica made her and people at her station realize that they were not alone, that they were part of a larger movement, and how important the audio port was to reinforcing that on a daily basis. People like Michael Black at a college in New York, who talked about that he saw carrying Democracy Now! And being affiliated with Pacifica as as part of teaching students that anyone who works in media has a commitment to fulfill public service, and that he thought any station who didn't affiliate or didn't look to fulfill that public service was really failing to do what media should do and what the public should do. Or people like Jamie Hoover, who talked about how at her school the archives become such an important resource during any kind of commemorative event, any kind of historical event, any sort of holiday that came up, that the archives were a way to bring it back to life for the students there. I also worked on creating a newsletter, and that will be a more focused forum for the affiliates to speak with each other and for Pacifica to speak on different issues. Part of the idea was to really start by asking, what are the things that what do the affiliates need to know from Pacifica, and what do the affiliates need to be able to share with each other, and to try to create sort of thematic approaches that would come out periodically. The first issue has three articles, and each of those articles is about the person and the station who was nominated to be the affiliate representative to the board, so that the affiliates will know their representatives. An upcoming issue, we'll talk a little bit about some of the legislative tools that are becoming available for growth, the ability maybe for stations to function as emergency broadcast or develop their emergency broadcast capabilities, the need for the aspects of full power licensing that will come up, so that will be in the next one. And we're hoping that as the issues continue, that eventually we will be getting articles from different stations also, and that affiliates will use this as a way for them to place their concerns and their issues and their ideas at the forefront. That's it. That's what I've been doing. Thank you.
The newsletter is going to be posted at pacificanetwork.org, which is the website that we've developed for the network. Rip, I'm going to ask you to speak a little bit. As most of you on the board know, an affiliates task force was created, and we've been trying to get it organized. We've been working away at it, and quite a few people from the task force are here. And Rip, would you want to talk a little bit?
Sure. I'd like to talk about affiliates, and many of you in the room know the word affiliates, and many of you think that affiliates are...
Excuse me, Rip, sorry to interrupt you, but for those of you, I know some of you in the audience don't know Rip. Rip Robbins is the affiliates board member. He's representing the affiliate network, so to speak. There's actually two board members. The other gentleman is sick right now. Rip is from Washington State, from radio station KSVR.
Thanks. Well, I was really happy to see a lot of my colleagues from Washington State in the video. Pacifica is probably the most important alternative network in our area of the country. But affiliates are not just one thing, and the word affiliate does make it seem so. But they do have one thing in common. They all do want to utilize Pacifica programming. But they actually have a variety of motives. Some affiliates are interested in a la carte shopping at Pacifica, meaning Democracy Now!, Free Speech Radio News, and Archive Premiums. But other stations are dedicated to the mission, and they look to Pacifica as a model for a progressive network, and they value the history and the good work that Pacifica has done and continues to do. And Ursula just mentioned PacificaNetwork.org, and I encourage everyone to go there to take a look at some of the work that she and Pete have done to set up an information base for potential new clients to the network. And hopefully the network's going to continue the growth pattern that we've seen in recent years. Let me give you just an example. When you go to that website, of the kind of affiliates that we have, the kind of different affiliates that exist. Of course, we have community radio affiliates that are similar to the sister stations. We also have community college radio stations that affiliate like mine. We also now have public radio stations who are taking Pacifica programming. Now we have LPFMs, low power stations, which really shouldn't be called low power, it's just low wattage radio stations. A newer invention are internet radio stations, and they're becoming affiliates. So what we have is we have some different definitions for affiliates and different contracts that we write with them, but we're all part of that network that's broadening. And here's some new affiliates that we're looking at. Believe it or not, commercial radio stations are now inquiring about becoming affiliates to take some of the programming. It's obvious that commercial programming isn't satisfying as much as it was perhaps in the past, and they're looking to the kind of programming that Pacifica stations develop. People want to hear that kind of programming. Now we're seeing that international entities are making inquiries about getting Pacifica programming. And we're also seeing schools inquire about becoming affiliates. And what's interesting about this is that it's dovetailing with some of the initiatives that the board has been reviewing lately, including outreach to schools, high schools, and colleges for use of the programming, of the current radio programming, and also use of the archive material that we have. And also it's dovetailing with the concepts of new technologies delivery that we've been talking about here at the board level recently. I would also encourage everyone to take a look at the audio port, because the audio port is opening up more opportunities for program sharing, which is just going to open up more and more opportunities for other outlets to take advantage of the Pacifica programming that we have to offer, and also programming that's contributed by the affiliate stations, so that it becomes a two-way sharing network that we have. It's not just the five sister stations producing programming. Now we have over, 85 to 90 affiliates that are also contributing programming that I see as a valuable sharing network that Pacifica stations, that the sister stations can take advantage of, as well as the affiliates. So I know that at my station, my audience is I would just be parroting what everyone said up there. We have terrific programming that comes from Pacifica, and what it does is it enlarges the information that my audience could get, which we could never be able to do on our own. So I know my station appreciates that too.
We currently have 95 affiliates, and it's pretty certain that by the end of this fiscal year, which is October, that we'll have hit the 100 mark. So what we have really now is the potential for much more than a situation that's just clients and distribution. We really have the potential to have a network to do something, to do various things to impact our country. Some of the things that have been brought up have been using a network like ours for an emergency system of some sort, an emergency alert system if necessary. There's a lot of interest in using community radio to try and influence people's thinking during election time. And a current project that Pacifica has joined in together now with the National Federation of Community Broadcasters and the Prometheus Project is an effort to create new radio licenses around the country, because the FCC is soon going to open a window for probably the last commercial, the last non-commercial radio licenses that are going to be available. So this is going to be a big campaign that Pacifica is going to be participating in. And what we've done is we've hired somebody to figure out where all the remaining frequencies are in the country. And the gentleman who did it, his name is Mike Brown. He's in Portland, Oregon. He sent me, he made all these maps showing where these frequencies are, and he sent them to me. The hotel tells me they're not here yet, but as soon as they come, the hotel's promised me we can tape them to the walls. So probably by tonight or tomorrow, we'll be able to have some maps on the wall so you can check out where frequencies are around the country. another part of the ideas of building a larger kind of activity than just having, in other words, really creating a movement, is the idea of building regional networks. And Evelyn Bethune, who is sitting at the end here, is also on the Affiliates Task Force, and had a very interesting conversation with some of the people in the Northwest that are working on this. And Evelyn, if you could just say a few words. We're trying to keep everything to 3 minutes here because we're trying to keep time.
Very brief, great. I promise. In that conversation, basically it was a conference call with a gentleman who is a part of the Northwest Affiliates Network. And what he was talking about was the value of being able to use the archives and the audio ports for programming, digital programming, and his station is just, that's their primary focus. He is very excited about being a part of what Pacifica is doing. And what he has is something that, if we really take a solid look at it, could be basically cloned and used across the affiliates network to help really grow a solid foundation for educational kinds of programming and just a host of sharing of information and programs across the affiliates network and Pacifica network. So it was really exciting to talk to him, and I think that we'll have continued dialogue and see where the best fit is to be able to do something, because what the affiliates are talking about doing is more hands-on touching of the affiliates from Pacifica in terms of helping them to be more connected to us and us to be more connected to them. And part of what I think can come from the Northwest Affiliates Network is the how to do that, because they have a very solid program already in place. So it's not like we'd have to recreate the wheel. We can take what's there and grow it.
Thank you. Partly what they're doing in the Northwest is they're pioneering the concept of building networks based on local regional groups, so that stations all close to each other build their own networks so they can exchange programming and develop regional news and also help each other with training. In other words, if there's a strong station in an area, like this station was in Seattle, they can help the little stations around them not only acquire licenses but also build the stations and train them. And so it's the idea is that people close to you can help each other, and if they then work with Pacifica, in a way, they become a natural outreach effort for us based on local contacts. I'm going to last but not least, ask Dina to speak. Dina is also working on the Affiliates Task Force, and why don't you describe what you're doing?
Hi, I'm Dina Colbert, and I've been working with the affiliates since 2001, and I have to say it's been an incredible experience. I have friends literally across the nation, and I can't tell you what it's like, but as you get to know managers everywhere and then producers everywhere, it feels like family, literally, across, the nation. So I really encourage everybody to feel that and to join in with us. And one way of doing that is we formed a committee called Connecting Pacifica Networks Producers. And the goal of that is to connect the producers across the network so that they can produce programming in partnership and collaboration. That's the goal, and we're building a database to do that. And this is right now in the concept and formation stage. So far, I've been able to talk to three of our sister stations. I plan to talk to the other two. I'm almost positive they will join in. And we're doing this collaboratively. I also need to talk to every one of the program directors in the sister stations as we developed the basic stages. But right now, we have three stages of working this through. First of all, in talking to, and I also talked to dozens of managers at NFCB to find out what they thought about it and would they come on board. And so we're really building support for this database before we even begin it, which is very important. One thing that everybody has said is that all collaborations must meet the needs of the local stations. They must have their own voice. Producers want their own voice. Stations want their own voice. The database needs to be implemented in stages. The first stage is to utilize what we already have in place. And for those of you who aren't aware of it, there is a program called Sprouts, which is a network-wide collaboration of producers. Any producer in the network can join it. You just have to get hold of Ursula, and she'll help key you into the programs that are being produced, and you can be a part of that. We also have a listserv, a Sprouts listserv, for producers that are producing. And so rather than start another listserv or another kind of programming, what we're asking everybody to do is join in something that's already in place and just help build it. We also want to determine which stations do production and which do not in the network across the country, and we want a list of stations that produce news. That would be stage one, to give us a base of information. Stage two would be to incorporate youth programming and to incorporate those stations that do training programs, to tell us where we are in those two areas. And the last part of the database, of course, would be the most important, which is all the details in the database. It would list all producers who could put down by issue what they do, subject matter, whichever word you like. Also, the area of interest that they may be interested in. For instance, I do public programs, but I may want to do specials, and in what areas. Also, area of functionality. Do they have technical skills? Don't they have technical skills to come on board? What kind of previous programming have they done? Give us examples. Special programming, interviews. So some of all of that is what we're talking about, but that makes it a very complicated database, and we don't want to go there to begin. What we want to do is get the basics that I said in stage one up and running, basics in stage two running, and then we'll look at the complication of all that other material. We have some questions that we haven't... Okay, we need to end it. So there are only two questions, quickly. One is how to bring structure, quality, and standards to this process. And the other question is, if there are other collaborations and partnerships in the network, can we link them to our website? And for those people who are interested, I recommend that you contact ursletpacifica.org, and she will give me the information and will put you into the database. Thanks.
So are there any questions?
Before we do that, I was wondering if we could ask the indulgence of the audience to let us go another 5 minutes so the board can ask a couple of questions prior to public comment. Would that be acceptable to almost everybody? Is there any objection on the board to extending 5 more minutes? So we'll have about 7 minutes to ask questions and be in dialogue? Okay, great. So you were asking for questions?
Yeah.
So who would like to... does anybody have a question? Bob?
Yeah, two questions. First, can you just give us an example of some of the programs that Pacifica offers that are less well-known, and how many do we offer currently to affiliates altogether?
On the satellite, there's 22 programs. And it's kind of hard to say because AudioPort is basically an infinite archive. The AudioPort people upload from all of the Pacifica or affiliate stations. I don't know how many shows are in the archives, several thousand by now. So it's an ever-expanding offering. Examples of other types of shows. Shows that we have on the satellite, some of them are from Pacifica stations. I think we have at least one show from each station. The show that's on the satellite here from New York is Explorations with Michio Kaku, and is actually taken by quite a few affiliates. And then there's shows that independent producers do. Counterspin is on the satellite.
Drug War News.
Right. And
Drug War News,
right. And there's Making Contact comes out of Berkeley. Larry Bensky has a show on the satellite. The satellite schedule is readily available. If you go to pacificanetwork.org, it's all there. You can see what's there. And if you go to AudioPort, just go to audioport.org and you can just search by topic or producer.
Thanks. And thanks for your report. I just wanted to ask you to briefly expand on two of your issues of concern. One is to provide cross-cultural materials that meet the needs of diverse communities, and the second is to provide a budget that meets the needs of the affiliate coordinator to expand the network and maintain quality services.
Okay. There is a budget committee on the task force, and Greg and Lonnie have graciously agreed to speak to us about finances, about, or to at least talk to us about the financial situation with the affiliates program. So hopefully within the next few days we'll meet with them and talk it over. What we did do is when I made the initial budget, I met with the members of the task force and they advised me. Fortunately, Rip was on that and he's an experienced station manager, so he was able to give me a lot of advice.
The cross-cultural materials?
The cross-cultural is that there have been inquiries internationally at this point, and it's possible that we could have affiliates around the world, and at some point we have to make materials available as we go along, and that's why it's put where it is.
Ray?
Yeah. Well, thank you. Hearing how important the work of the affiliates, the whole program is, it's rather surprising that there's no line item in our budget for that this program. And I hope that, I urge that we really get down to business and see how we can move this forward. I'm getting a smile from the executive director. I hope that's a good sign. I'm working with the affiliate committee now and looking forward to doing good work. As an organizer, I know how difficult it is to organize in the South, you know, being made up of mostly of so-called right-to-work states and so on. Can you tell us how many stations are part of the affiliate group that are from the South, and what are the prospects for the immediate future?
It's not a lot. It's no more than five. We just got a new affiliate in Port Arthur, Texas, which is in the area where Katrina was very Port Arthur was very hard hit by Katrina, and it's a small, actually African American low-powered radio station that is located in the city hall in Port Arthur and has become very central in terms of dealing with the cleanup area. So that's going to be a very interesting group of people to get to know.
We have the
process that Evelyn was talking about is a process that we've been talking about in terms of the South, and Yvonne, who's not here, is interested in using this model of local networks to build up connections in the South that don't exist yet.
We have 3 minutes, actually 2 minutes left. We have three people who'd like to ask a question: LaVarn, Don, and Alan. If we could go very quickly, please, through each. LaVarn.
Yeah, this is fine. Thank you for the report. It's always very, very fulfilling or interesting to see the affiliates and to actually hear you here. But I had a question that was actually similar to what the young man there, Ray, asked. Thank you. And that's in terms of stations in the South or stations in Louisiana or in that area, I guess you could almost call it the hurricane belt now. Do we have stations there? And with KPFA, they have KFCF, which is more of a sister station. And are there any directions in terms of trying to develop stations in that type of relationship, particularly in that area because of the critical nature of what is happening, both the economic in terms of putting a spotlight on the economics of that area and the fact that, the global warming and issues that could be related to the hurricanes in that area?
Well, we're very fortunate that one of our board members, who is not here today but is usually here, is Yvonne Dooley, who's the station manager from WRFG in Atlanta, Georgia. And WRFG is one of the kind of outposts for community radio in the South. Yeah, that's right. So Yvonne is really interested in taking a leadership role when he gets out of the hospital to help forge more of those relationships. Trying to remember what the other half of your question was.
Just concerning in terms of relationships like KFCF.
Oh, right. The KFCF is an associate station, and they are basically rebroadcast KPFA's content. And I'm not actively involved with that kind of relationship. That's more of a relationship that a station manager would develop with a station in the vicinity. I have been involved with the idea of sister stations in the sense of building relations between stations in the United States that can help each other, and also stations in North America that want relationships with stations in other countries around the world. That's an idea that there's a lot of talk about, and I think especially when we begin to try to help people apply for new licenses, which is going to be a very difficult process, the idea of sister stations is going to become even more important, because stations that already exist can buddy up with people that want to build community radio stations and help them through this very difficult process.
We're at time now. Does the board want to extend enough for Don and Alan to ask a minute question each and a minute response?
So moved.
Without objection, please keep your comments and the response quick.
I'll make this very quick. I was fascinated, Rip, by your comment about commercial stations, maybe wanting to carry, you know, programming. Where is that? How many? And this is not totally comical, but is this a new revenue source for a Pacifica, and will the rates be somewhat higher than affiliates? Or
we've been approached by three commercial radio stations. One of them was in Santa Cruz, offered a lot of money. Another one is in Minneapolis, offered no money. And the third, and neither of those stations are affiliates. At the time when these people approached us, the sense at Pacifica was that we didn't have the policies in place, and unfortunately we turned them down. I think it's unfortunate. I would have liked to have had the money. The third station happens to be an affiliate. It's a group of people in Buffalo who kind of slid under before this became an issue. They actually start out by renting time on a commercial station, and our programming was so successful that they ended up getting the whole station, and now they basically run the station. It's an AM station, and it is a commercial station, and they run it, and they have increased their fees dramatically because they are commercial. They're really quite something.
Alan?
I don't believe they run commercials during the program, though.
No, they don't. They run before and after.
One thing
I want to say about that. This is related to the Air America phenomenon, because Air America stations are being created, and then they want to couple up with Pacifica.
Alan?
Three questions, very quick, though. How many non-English language affiliates are there? And separate of that question, how much interest would you anticipate or already know that there is for the national Spanish language program from Pacifica? That's two questions. And third question, which could inform a future discussion of this board at this meeting, what would you anticipate the reception would be among affiliates to an hour-long daily national show leading up to the national elections in November this year?
There's only one affiliate that I know of that's not completely non-English, and that's the station in Immokalee, Florida, with the farm workers.
Yeah.
RIP station in Washington is 60% Spanish. Yeah. So some of our affiliates, the station you saw, KRCL in Salt Lake City, has a lot of Spanish. So some of our stations do broadcast a lot of Spanish. I do think there would be interest. I think that one of the things that Rip and I want to do to support the Spanish language effort is to survey the affiliates and provide information to those people who are developing it, because Rip actually had a lot of very interesting feedback to give because of his experience with running programming like that. Okay. The last question
was again to inform a potential future discussion we'll have at this meeting concerning an idea that's been floated for
I think some stations would take it. Some stations are already beginning to get more frequency because of going digital, and are asking us for more programming. They're saying, you know, we would give you a whole morning if you have the programming. KUNM is one of the stations that's saying that to us. So those stations are looking for that kind of thing. What do you think, Rip?
Excuse me. Given the shortness of time, I'm hoping that we can incorporate more of that discussion when we talk about national programming during the programming committee report and at other times during the weekend. So that gets us through the affiliate director report. Thank you very much, Ursula. Mm-hmm. There are 21 people signed up for public comment and a half an hour allocated for it. Since we went over a little into your time, I think it only fair that we extend that a little bit to accommodate everybody. However, if we go more than about a minute and a half per person, we'll be here for another 45 minutes. So we would appreciate it if you could keep your comments under a minute and a half. We'll put a sign up when there's 30 seconds left. We'll let you know when there's a minute and a half left. I'm also going to call people three at a time, and if you could be ready after the previous speaker has spoken to come up so that the time between speakers is not long, I'd appreciate it. The other thing is, during public comment, there's a tendency for the room to get noisy, and that also slows things down. So if we can all be respectful of every speaker and give them our full attention, that would help. The first speaker is Zoom Der Taubian, if I am correct in that. Stefan Neustadter and William Heerwagen. I apologize for butchering the pronunciation of anybody's names. Those are the first three people. And Deb here is going to keep time, and she'll let you know at 30 and... with 30 seconds remaining in the time.
I would like to ask, why is this meeting in an expensive hotel? Why aren't we in a community organization? So many of them are right here in New York. WBAI has not reached its fundraising goals in 2 years, so the money that's spent on renting this room, you know, should maybe help them. Also, I want to talk about the left out people who constantly call to be on the radio, and because they don't know the right person, they don't have the connections, they never get airtime. So I think in all the affiliates, there should be a certain block of time that's almost like a lottery, and maybe half of that should be for indigenous peoples, which don't get enough airtime, and there could be a fair way of reaching the community besides clicks and, you know, knowing the right people.
Stefan Neustadter. Firstly, I think the Pacifica and WBA are a gem of unparalleled value. The other point I would make is that WBAI is a house divided now. There were major clashes before the coup, clashes during the coup and after. And I really think that the board, the Pacifica board, should really review and see what's happening, because we're going to lose this. We're going to be fighting amongst ourselves, and we're going to lose it. Lastly, or next to last, is there was a reference to WBAI losing a major funding source without naming names. That major funding source was very divisive. He badmouthed the station both on and off, and it was blood money. He was taking WBAI blood for a relatively small amount of money. And lastly, on this matter of money or spending, why do we have security guards here? I know the WBAIs can be rambunctious, but we do know how to behave ourselves in meetings. And certainly, since we got rid of the thugs in the coup, we trust the board more. So why are we paying for security?
Good evening. My name is William Heerwagen. I'm a long-time listener, member, and I recently started volunteering last year, and now I've attended some meetings, committees, and then recently this year the LSB at WBAI. And I'd just like to thank you all for giving me some hope, but there, as with an example of a good, or how a meeting could be run. When I go to the meetings at LSB this year for WBAI, there's a group that's in the minority that's against the program director. They delay, they stall, they disrupt. They just, nothing gets done at WBAI LSB meetings because of these people. And I hope something could happen a little bit better. Thank you.
Martin, next one is Martin Atrian and Ken Nash and Paul Durenzo. Martin Atrian, Ken Nash, and Paul Durenzo.
Oh, William. But I already did that.
We only had.
I'm half deaf and the sound system is lousy. Anyway, an observation before I start. I see civility, cooperation. I hear wonderful positive things about what programming can be and what have you. We don't have this at WBAI's local station boards. It's a nightmare. I mean, there's a black cloud that hangs over the place. And I'm delighted to see that other people are feeling some of that. And I don't know whether it's avoidance or what, but I think it should be expressed and brought out and dealt with. Enough already. Subject, detractors at WBAI, on-air producers, LSB members, etc. Starting with the most egregious. Gary Null telling his listeners on air not to support the station financially during fundraising. Telling his listeners on air to follow him immediately at the end of his show to follow him to his next program. Identifying the station, taking away WBAI audiences. And the worst offense, attempting to take over the station by having it put into receivership. This being done with his attorney and two old Christmas Coug board members. Luckily, it was thrown out of court. Can you imagine working at WBAI with that martinet at the helm? By the way, he has stated on air that he never gives anyone a second chance. I repeat that. He never gives anyone a second chance.
Time.
Oh, damn.
And thank you so much for respecting the time, sir.
Hi, my name is Ken Nash. I'm a shop steward with the Unpaid Staff Organizing Committee at WBAI, and I co-produce a show called Building Bridges, Your Community and Labor Report, WBAI. Last November, the Pacifica National Board passed a resolution calling for management to create an unpaid staff list for LSB election purposes with the participation of unpaid staff unions or organization, but giving management the sole right to check its accuracy. At the January USOC meeting, we passed a resolution urging the PNB to change this resolution so that any conflict in authentication of the list would be arbitrated by a third party picked by both union and management, not unilaterally by management. There would be an arbitration system also to resolve differences which would extend to stations where unions exist. We're particularly concerned about this PNB resolution because it seeks to create a situation where the unpaid staff do the work of creating the list of union members and management has the power to authenticate this list. The definition of unpaid staff is a jointly agreed upon clause in our collective bargaining agreement and not something whose definition management can implement unilaterally. We're also very concerned about a proposal for the PNB Programming Committee's proposed national programming policy covering sale and syndication of Pacifica programming, but I don't have time to talk about this now. It'll be discussed at the next board meeting, and I hope you take real thought about this because it's very important and possibly illegal. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Paul DiRienzo, Chris Farrell, Frank Lefevre.
Well, I hate to rain on the parade, but I'll lay it out this way, and I don't know how people are going to take it, but WBAI should be renamed Democracy Not Now, because that's what's happening there. WBAI has failed financially, it's failed in governance, it's failed its union, and USOC is not a union and does not even represent unpaid staff. It's failed its mission, it has declining membership, increased infighting, reduced only by the layoffs because there's nobody left to fight anymore. The interim general manager, is trying but can do little more than damage control. Is WBAI a Pacifica station, or is it a lone wolf, a law unto itself that just decides what it wants to do anytime it feels like? The problem. The PNB here does little to understand the problems in New York City and adapts and accepts simplistic explanations from the JUC. The entrenched programmers who hog airtime at WBAI and support certain managers in blocking any real community input. Some programmers have been there for years and have hours and hours of programs, and their entire lives represent supporting the program director and making sure that nobody ever challenges that time, and these programs do nothing to add to the mission. Wasting the time of the PNB. The elections have been questionable. Membership lists, as you have had to deal with here, are questionable. Maybe it's time to think of a signal swap. There's new licenses coming up. Maybe you should give the JUC their own radio station. They can operate out of a church basement in Brooklyn, and we can think about getting a real station in New Orleans. Thank you.
Chris Farrell, then Frank Lefevre, and Janet Coleman.
My name is Chris Farrell. I'd like to say something about the switch at WBAI to what the program director, I believe, calls a premium-driven model of fundraising. It seems to me that's a fundamental shift from Pacifica's vision of producing programming that was so good that even if though people could get it for free, they would be willing to pay to support it, to one that is predicated on selling books, DVDs, CDs at highly inflated rates and using WBAI Pacific as a brand name to leverage people to get them to pay for that. A shift, as you would say, from information to infomercial. This has several disturbing effects, and one of which is that it's not particularly successful. It's painful to watch the station go broke by selling out. Also, what that means, because WBAI is now raising funds about 25% of the time, you have one day out of four, one of the determining factors on what gets on the air is how well will it sell. Because premiums featuring a conspiracy view of what happened on 9/11 happened to be a good seller, if you listen to WBAI during a marathon period, you might well get the impression that that's the only political question worth debating, and that the only possible answer is that, in fact, it was a government conspiracy. Not that this is one viewpoint that might be discussed, but, in fact, that's the only viewpoint. Then the station has the makers of the video they've been selling on, and they have to interview the people who are responsible for their for the funds that's coming in, exactly what Pacifica warned about.
My name is Frank Lefevre. I retired from a position as a researcher and clinician at Helen Hayes Hospital 3 years ago. Since then, I've spent entirely too much time at LSB committee meetings. I understand you folks have an important issue to vote on tomorrow. One of the important things about our voting system here is that it's not winner takes all, but we have a provision to preserve minority voices and our governance bodies. However, the gang that's controlling things at the LSB at WBAI has found a way around that. They have managed to rob one constituency of its representation for over a year by misusing a Robert's Rules of Order provision aimed at preserving decorum at one meeting. And their continuing excuse is they don't believe that the culprit's excuse is sincere enough. What the hell is it? Is it the Spanish Inquisition? Is it Mao's Cultural Revolution? What do you mean? They, the judge, the prosecutor, the judge, and the jury decide whether or not somebody's apology is sincere? Come on now. They are going to remove people, dissident voices, one by one, first at BAI and then elsewhere when they see what a good recipe that is, if you folks will do something about it tomorrow. They have their eyes on others. They have their eye on Patty Heffley. They've already initiated an attack against her, a complete bullshit attack, and they have their eyes on two more members of the LSB.
Janet Coleman, Sean Rhodes, Steffi Brooks.
Because of the shortness of time and long list of people, I am going to save some critical commentary for later sessions. Right now, I want to bring tidings from our great radio mentor and the inventor of freeform radio, Bob Fass, who is in a Staten Island hospital now after a serious bout with pericarditis, several conditions resulting from that is the sac around the heart. And I think if you are interested in your own institutional memory, and most progressive institutions are, and respect their elders in a way that we do not, it might be really nice if you all emailed Bob Fass some some, what do you call it? It's not condolences, but get well soons, and you can. I will forward them to him if you write me at jcoleman@wbai.org. Time, criticism to follow.
I'm going to cede my time to Mitchell Cohen.
Thanks, Sean. Hi. I wanted to follow up on what Janet said about Bob Fast. Bob almost died last week, and he's in a very dangerous situation in the hospital. And I'd like for the board members to appreciate the work that he's done for 40 years now over at BAI, and perhaps issue some sort of a proclamation or a plaque or a gift that we could bring to Bob in the hospital, and perhaps a visit from some people from different station areas. I know it would cheer him up enormously, and that's all I want to say right now, and I'll talk some more tomorrow about the criticisms and other things about the station, but I think that should take some degree of prominence here. Thank you.
Mr. Rhodes, if you'd like to speak, we'll take the whole list, so, okay. Steffi Brooks, Berta Silva, Indra Hardat.
On Bob, he has 40, 45 years worth of digital tape, an oral history trove that he doesn't have the money to digitize and preserve. So I think that would be a real service if the board could think about doing something with this treasure. And I also think that the board should, he has no retirement, he has no benefits, and there are other people who have devoted their lives to Pacifica. So I don't know how to deal with that, but I think the board should put that on your plate. I want you to keep your eyes on the ball. I'm very impressed with the affiliates report. I think that's really, really, really important. Also, the Spanish language programming and other national programming, and also whatever efforts can be made to increase the diameter of the pipeline so that more new people can get on. Without these kinds of moves, Pacifica will not prosper. At BAI, we need a volunteer coordinator. I know we have no money, but we're losing out on hundreds of people with money, talent, resources who want to contribute, and they can't get a call back or an email back because the staff is overwhelmed. We need that.
Thank you. Berta Silva, Indra Hardat, Eddie Ellis.
Muy buenas tardes. Mi nombre es Berta Silva. I'm a member of the local station board here in New York City. I'd like to talk about the Latino programming. Some of you know or may have heard that we're having a controversy where some of the Latino programmers here in New York City have united, are asking that their time not be taken away. Someone earlier mentioned that sometimes some of the producers become entrenched. Nobody wants their programs to be touched. This is not a WBAI program. This is a Pacifica-wide issue. And so, therefore, what I'm saying today is that in light of what is happening in our country with immigrant rights, with the growing Latino community in all of our major cities, and yes, the program director is attempting to address this issue, but not to the satisfaction of the Latino programmers, I'm asking that Latino programming be expanded in all of the affiliates, of course, in all of the cities where Pacifica is located, and that we start serving the Latino broader community, not just giving us a few, you know, hours here, 20 minutes here. And I hope that we can address this in your future discussions with the affiliates and ongoing policy on programming. Thank you.
The next person is Indra Hardat, and then Eddie Ellis.
Hi, good evening, everyone, and welcome to New York City. And my message is that I would like to invite all of you to come to the station for a visit. That includes the public. Thank you very much.
And Indra, that's immediately
tonight
after the session?
Tonight, after the session.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
That's all you have to say.
Indra will be, excuse me, Indra will be providing a report to the board, and we'll be having discussion with her for approximately 40 minutes tomorrow, so there'll be plenty of time for Indra to talk about things that she does not need to talk about during public comment. This is your time. Eddie Ellis. Is Mr. Ellis not here? Jacinta or Jacinta Higgs, followed by Serene Roberts and Kathy Davis. Is Jacinta Higgs here? No? Okay. Is she? Jacinta Higgs? Okay, well, we'll proceed, and when she comes back, we'll return to her. Serene Roberts? Not seeing Serene. Kathy Davis, then Arun Aguiar.
Hello, I'm Kathy Davis, the Public Affairs Director for WBAI Radio. And we have just finished one more very arduous fundraising campaign on the air, and unfortunately we did not meet our goals. This is not exactly what I wanted to talk about, though. What I wanted to talk about is the erosion of the ability of the radio station to function and the staff to function because of the internalized politics that are manifesting on the local, our local station board. And I feel that there needs to be some, a willingness for people to step back and not be so intent on winning and not be so intent on destroying the person on the opposite side, and allow the staff to address the issues of running the radio station without fearing that they're going to be aggressively dealt with by members of the board, depending on the factions. So I just think there needs to be a step back and a looking and a communication between the LSB and the staff at the radio station.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Arun Aguiar, and it looks like I might be the last of the speakers, and so that gives me. Oh no, okay, I got to revise my presentation then. But now I've already got it set, so let me say it. If I were the last, then I would have to ask you the question. You gentlemen have heard a lot of people express virtually the same kind of sentiment, and I want to know what y'all are going to do about it. Are you going to be the wailing wall to whom we just come and wail? Are you going to be the Sphinx who just sits there without reacting? Are you going to be the oracles at Delphi? Because you've heard it all. And in fact, I think you haven't really heard the degree of passion and horror and shock and frustration which really exists in the station. I was very active until we were able to put the station management back after the Christmas coup. And then I followed Leslie Kagan into the anti-war movement and basically did not have much to do with the station. About a month ago, I came back looking really excitedly towards seeing a vibrant, throbbing, beautiful, exciting station. It's been such a disillusionment. I've been wearing this shirt saying, "We will not be silent." It's really meant for the government. It's meant against the administration. Frankly, I think we, listeners and other people who are interested, we got to be using this shirt every time you confront and meet somebody in BAI, because things are just so bad. They're so horrible. Tomorrow, if I have some more time, I'll elaborate.
Thank you very much. Eric Williams. Eric Williams, followed by Roger Manning, Jane Jackson, and Carolyn Burden is the last speaker.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and fellow broadcasters. My name is Eric Williams. I'm a reporter at the WBAI Evening News, which runs Monday through Friday. First, let me get a few things out of the way. I am neither a member of, nor do I represent, any faction at WBAI. I have no interest in starting the next revolution or race riot. Instead, I want to talk about radio, new audiences, expanding the subscription base, and thinking about positive steps to help turn around the status quo. Many of my colleagues have dreams and ways to make this happen. While there is nothing wrong with dreams, I have a plan. We speak of giving voice to the voiceless and closely examining topics, issues, and communities that fall into this category. One such community is the Brazilians. They are the fastest growing immigrant group of Latin Americans living among us. On March 20th, I produced and took part in a pilot program featuring Brazilian music. The response to this bilingual program was overwhelmingly positive. Yet the Brazilian community in New York and nationally is ignored and unrepresented by the mainstream media. At the same time, their numbers are formidable, unofficially 2 million. Here in the New York metropolitan area, about 500,000. I should know. I've done the research. I've documented, number crunched, and presented a detailed 26-page proposal addressing this community.
Time.
I'm out of time?
Sometimes, so that we could hear this presentation.
It's just a few more lines. Thank you very much. It's the shorter than the Gettysburg Address, I assure you. The March program drew notice in the local Brazilian press in the metropolitan area, and it created a buzz. And I should add, we added 5 new subscribers to WBAI. Yes, indeed, they signed on, in spite of the fact that this was a non-fund drive show. There is a need for such a program, and currently there are no radio outlets for this community. On September the 3rd of this year, 1.3 million people will attend the annual Brazilian Day Festival in Times Square. It's an audience we can have access to. Right now, this community is very excited about the prospect of having such a program on WBAI, and it would be a win-win for all, not only for those of us at WBAI, but for the entire network. Let me just conclude by saying, like the readers of those publications who tuned into WBAI last month, March, I ask what's next. And I want to thank you for your time and giving me the time. And I want to ask the National Board to support this effort to reach this large and underrepresented community. You all have a good night.
Thank you. Roger Manning, Jane Jackson, and Carolyn Burton.
Hi, everybody. I'm Roger Manning. I'm on the staff at WBAI on the website. And I'm the former Pacifica secretary, and it's nice to see a lot of you folks today. Certainly no one or several people are, to blame for the strife at WBAI, at the board, and at the station and so forth, but I'd like to focus on one person who I feel has contributed quite a bit, and that is Bob Lederer. It's not always apparent what Bob's working on or what he's behind, but because there's many presenters of things that he's involved in. In any case, the motive is not always so obvious either. There's things presented, reasons for the things that are being put forward, but the real reason, much of the time, in terms of attacks on various board members specifically, is to remove political opponents. In fact, if Bob had his way a few years ago, many of you people would not be sitting on this board of directors because he was against, initially, the new system of elections and elected boards at Pacifica and greater inclusiveness and diverse opinions and input. Bob is an extremely talented person. I've worked with him on the website over a number of years, although not talented in all ways. He's very convincing, very intelligent, and very well at organizing things. Unfortunately, His methods have been extremely destructive, divisive, corrupt, and at times even criminal in terms of a lot of the political going on around.
Sorry, I'm going to pull that out of order. Thank you very much, Roger. We don't accept statements of attribution of that sort.
Well,
I'm sorry. Thank you very
okay,
much.
Okay, yeah, fine.
You're at time. James
but
Jackson?
I would ask that...
I'm sorry. No.
James Bob
Jackson? I'm sorry. Statements like that will not be entertained by this board.
Resign now. Thank
James
you.
James Jackson, please. Can somebody assist Jane with the microphone?
Good evening. I'm Jane Jackson. I'm back on the LSB from KPFA. And I'm concerned. I'm delighted about hearing about Fort Arthur, Texas. But I had to listen to my local radio television station to hear about some of the activities of Malik Rahim in the Ninth Ward of New Orleans. And I wonder if anybody is taking that issue seriously. I'm just back from Cuba, and I understand in my absence that one of our board members brought forth a resolution to try to assist their request for our assistance. And it seems to me that we need to do something to do just exactly that. And I'm really very sad that the racism workshop was not open to LSB members, because after all, that's the route from which you come. And other than that, my question is about transportation to the station this evening. I was told the public system was accessible, but are we using public money for an inaccessible transit system that only takes some of us?
Odie, can you please assist Jane? Carolyn Burden. Thank you, Jane.
Good evening. Carolyn Burden from the BAI LSB. And I do want to remind the board that we seem to have different interpretations of the rules. The WBI LSB chair has allowed unfettered vilification and attacks, verbal and almost physical, on other members of the board by members and by supporters of the majority faction on the board. It has been, they've been obscene and vicious and frightening. The argument has always been that listener comment is not censored, and yet you have just made a rule which, if in fact is correct, should apply to the local committee, since we are creatures of the parent board. LSBs are creatures of the parent board, so I would like you to decide whether or not this sort of vilification at the WBI LSB can be allowed to continue. It is horrendous, I kid you not, and we will certainly be glad to send you videos and audios if you like. I didn't start out to say that. What I started out to say was to ask you to please tomorrow, one of the election committee motions that you're being asked to consider has to do with the clarification of rules regarding essentially member representation. As you know, one of our members has been kept off the board by what we think are illegal rules, application of the rules, manipulation of the rules, by certain people who are determined to keep to silence critics. I'm not saying that this member didn't deserve to be suspended for a meeting or whatever the rules allow, but in fact this has been a de facto permanent suspension under the guise of a temporary suspension. Right. And I'd ask you to look at that and make sure that your rules are being applied clearly and even-handedly all around the station. Thank you.
That's public comment for this evening. Before it was asked that I read briefly what our agenda is for the rest of the weekend so people know. But before I do that, I just want to say that in the 2.5 years I've been on this board and the 2 years I was on the board, coming to IPMB meetings and the several years before that at previous PMB meetings, I have never seen, the listeners so willing to respect the time that we asked them to hold themselves to, despite the fact that it was shorter than we usually do. So I want to really say thank you to everybody because it was remarkable. And it doesn't mean, and I just want to say I think that that willingness makes us hear it more intently and not less. We don't hear less, we hear more. And so I really do appreciate it because it's a long and tiring weekend. And I really appreciate everybody coming and how much you care about Pacifica. And I'm sure I speak for everybody when I say that. Tomorrow we're going to start our open session at 9 a.m. and we'll go to 12:05 with committee reports and associated motions. The Finance Committee for 15 minutes will be spending an hour on programming, governance, elections, affiliates, archives, and Committee of Inclusion. From 12:05 to 1 p.m. we will be having lunch. From 1 to 1:15, the compliance of an ADA compliance update. 1:15 to 2:15, we'll be having a thematic discussion on the future of staffing, paid and unpaid, and volunteerism. From 2:15 to 2:55, we'll have 40 minutes of public comment, followed by a 20-minute break. From beginning at 3:15, we'll have management reports that will include the executive director's report and discussion for 30 minutes, 30-minute discussion on technology, a 5-minute break followed at 4:20 by one of our two focus stations for this meeting, KPFT. We'll be spending 40 minutes with their KPFT GM, Dwayne Bradley, followed by 40 minutes from 5 to 5:40 of station Q&A with WPFW, KPFA, and KPFK managers. 5:40 to 6:40, we'll be having dinner. 6:40 to 7:10, finance with our CFO, Lonnie Hicks, and the thematic dialogue from 7:10 to 8:10 on how we create space for new initiatives at the stations. From 8:10 to 8:40, Indra Hardat will be presenting on WBAI, and from 8:40 to 9 p.m., Brian DeShazers will be discussing the archives. On Sunday, 9 to 10 a.m., an executive session, and then open session beginning at 10 to 11:15 for unfinished business. 11:15 to noon, a thematic dialogue on digital distribution approaches, if time allows. 12 to 12:30 on Sunday will be public comment. 12:30 to 1:15, a working lunch featuring the WBI presentation. And 1:15 to 3 p.m. will be remaining unfinished business and any new business. Thank you very much for coming.
Mr. Chairman,
we have an invitation to for a reception at WBAI. Yeah, Don.
I regret that I didn't raise this during the approval of the agenda. Tomorrow at 9 a.m., is it possible to have about a 2-minute report from PNB Audit Committee, which is not listed among either those reporting or those not reporting? I believe the newly elected chair of that committee will be here and would like to make about a 2-minute report.
Is there any objection to adding 5 minutes for the audit report?
Six.
I did say two, actually. Probably two is enough.
Okay.
What did you say?
Without objection, without objection, we will add that. Thank you.
I think he really only wanted 2 minutes. That's
the subways have been down. Would somebody like to come on the microphone and give people directions on how to get there?
You can take the number 6 train here, change to the number 4 or 5, take that to Wall Street.
The 6 you get at 51st and Lexington.
Right. And then change to the 4 and 5 at 42nd Street, and then take that to Wall Street, and then you have to walk down Wall Street to away from the World Trade Center Ground Zero site the other way.
And I'd like to ask, it's 120 Wall Street, I'd like to ask all directors to please take your book with you, and you may want to read through some of the reports so that for tomorrow's business we're much more efficient and people will be prepared. So please do remember to take your board packet with you.
You know what? Because of the time change, I got up this morning at 4.
Room at all? I'd like to take my stuff up. Can we do that?
I have no idea.